The Reset Podcast is a show about fresh starts. In business, career, relationships, health, and life in general, sometimes we all go forward to a new square one. Every moment is a new opportunity to begin again, and my guests will tell you how, when, and why they decided to reset their lives. I'm Franklin Taggart. Welcome to the Reset Podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Reset Podcast. My name is Franklin Taggart, and I'll be your host today. My guest today is a fellow named Kurt Baer, and I became aware of Kurt through the Larimer Small Business Development Center. Kurt is the founder of a really cool program in Northern Colorado called Loco Think Tank, and I'd just like to start by welcoming you, Kurt. Good morning.
Thank you, Franklin. Good morning to you as well.
Let's go back, before we start talking about the think tank, let's go back a little bit. You started out in banking, and how long were you in banking, first of all?
Just shy of 15 years in total.
Okay.
So a couple months shy. And I got into banking immediately out of college. I had an economics degree from North Dakota State University. Mm-hmm. I planned to get to Colorado for grad school to get my MBA at CU someday. And so... was preparing to move here and hope for the best when I learned about a credit and management training program offered by a Community First National Bank, mm-hmm. Which was in Fargo there where I went to college, but they had just acquired 23 banks in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
And I said, hey, that looks like my ticket to Colorado.
And it was.
I came to Fort Collins sight unseen in 1999 after about 6 months of classroom training and a 12-month internship at a bank in Minnesota.
And what part of the banking sector were you really directly involved in?
You know, that's an interesting one. When I first started, Community First model was basically to have super employees that had worked in all the departments of the bank, had been a teller for a week or two, a new accounts person, things like that. But not only that, they had us doing consumer lending, mortgage lending, investments. I had my Series 7 license, insurance, credit insurance, commercial loans, home equity loans, lines of credit, and new accounts if somebody wanted one. So that was the life that I got into immediately in banking. And it was challenging. There was just so much to know so fast to do your job well.
What period of time are we talking about for that level of training?
I did a 1 year internship at a bank in Worthington and that was supposed to kind of settle me into all that variety. Ultimately the highest value function at a bank is kind of the credit function, obtaining new customers that need loans and to help facilitate the issuance of those loans. Okay. And so even my first boss back in Minnesota, encouraged me to focus on that element of it right away. And within a few years, I had moved on to another organization that had said, you know, don't do these investments, don't do these car loans. We just want you to focus on these bigger deals.
Wow. And then you were in banking for 15 years. And at what point did you start to get restless with that and decide that you wanted to move in another direction?
You know, there are really a couple of different elements that I point to. When I moved back to Fort Collins, my wife and I moved to Colorado Springs for about 3 years. And when I got back up here, it was 2007. And one of the things I said to myself was, wow, look at all the farms and agriculture up here. And we've really got everything we need within a couple hundred miles of Fort Collins. We've got oil, we've got technology, we've got resources of agriculture, water, and then the other tough part was, wow, look, they're preparing to destroy the economy by all these funny money mortgages and things. And you know, I saw that coming. I didn't know what to do about it. I didn't have any capital. My father-in-law shifted half of his investment portfolio to gold against his advisor's better judgment, but you know, he went up during that economic meltdown while everybody else was going down. So I have some kind of, I'm in economics by training. And so anyway, I really got interested and invested in local business, sustainable farming and things like that, and trying to develop our system so that we could be sustainable within ourselves, not dependent on this global system of trade as much.
Wow. So and, pretty hyper-local focused.
Yeah, pretty hyper-local focused. And through that, I recognized that we needed a local food distribution company for that to really work well. And so I started working on that business model, got my dad and my father-in-law kind of excited about trying something. And then the financial collapse hit, and my bank staff went from 12 to 7 over a 8-month period, including my president of the bank, and I became acting president. And I just kind of shut down the thoughts on a food distribution company at that time. Throughout the next several years, we were under heavy federal oversight and ultimately rebranded the bank, went from a national charter to a state charter, and developed a lot of processes and systems. And I was a point person in that regard, which isn't my strong suit, but I knew that they needed to be done. Yeah. And ultimately where I really shined was in my, why I did well as a lender even, was I could write and communicate ideas quite well, that people would understand. And so I was tasked with writing a lot of the content for the new website. Who are we? What do we do? Why are we different? Why would you pick this place for your loans instead of some other? And that really inspired the creative notion in me. And I knew and saw that I wouldn't be able to make bets with other people's money anymore as a banker. That part of the business was kind of gone. And so I started. And in the meantime, I met a young lady that had started local food distribution. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Moser here in town, which should be a podcast subject for you one of these days.
Yeah, definitely.
So I met Elizabeth and about a year and a half after she got, well, probably two and a half years, she kind of got made it to sustainable from my perspective. And I was like, well, now I've got my local food distribution company. Now I can do my local food restaurant and take advantage of this passion for food that I have and community building and everybody being, having a safe place and whatever.
Yeah.
So I started developing those restaurant plans and I guess I might as well just keep going. I started developing these restaurant plans and was relatively transparent with my management about those plans. I didn't have any timeline really, but I, you know, wanted to start Bear's Backyard Bistro someday. Mm-hmm. So I was occasionally talking to property owners and developers and kitchen manager types that could help me with that. And my dad agreed to kind of help support it. Part of my backstory is my dad started a farm evenings and weekends when I was in first grade.
Wow.
And he was a motorcycle mechanic, came from a broken home. We grew up, you know, free school lunch until I think my junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. But he's developed a 9,000 acre grain farm now, corn and soybeans, and is a first generation wealth creator of sorts.
And
it's been a big inspiration throughout my whole life. It really gives me part of that realization that what you set your pointer on and work toward it for a long time diligently, that's what kind of success is built on in the end. So anyway, he agreed to kind of stake this venture and saw some promise in what I was talking about. And my boss at that time, they eventually hired me a new president for the bank, and I was the senior vice president for a period of years. But he left to go start another organization, another bank in town, and my new boss was not as amused by the dreams of a restaurant and kind of gave me you've got 90 days to decide if you want to be a banker when you grow up or if you want to be a restaurateur, because I don't want this split in your efforts and pursuits. And so didn't really have my plan figured out, but left banking and started a banking consulting business. Just if you can't find money, I'll help you find it, help your business plan and your cash flow look rational to the banker's mindset, tell you which bank that would actually consider your deal, because mm-hmm. I know all the bankers and who does what. Did a few transactions, but then didn't get my restaurant location, either of the couple of them that I was working on, and did start Loco Think Tank as a DBA of this banking consultancy, because in my banking career, I'd really seen peer advisory be a force for positive change within business owners and just giving them clarity about the most important things and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I wanted that for me as I figured out my restaurant.
Okay. At what point did you have the food cart?
And that was a few months after I got the think tank started. Mm-hmm. The group helped me see that the restaurant wasn't going to come about in a timely enough basis, and time is money, and I wasn't making any money after leaving a near six-figure income. And so got the food truck going in June of that same year. So think tank started, local think tank started in February as just a side arrangement kind of thing, and then got the food truck launched that following June.
And what was the food truck? What was your fare?
I would say internationally influenced Americana.
Okay.
We did and with a fair bit of locally sourcing, kind of irreverence. We'll put Asian flavors right in there with the Italian flavors if we want to. But like, we had a line of meatball sliders with a Swedish meatball, an Italian meatball, a Mexican meatball, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So we're all about diversity of flavor and nothing being right or wrong, but everything being kind of interesting in its own way.
Okay. And were you kind of doing the same thing that other food trucks and vendors were doing, going to the breweries and to the different Old Town events and things like that?
You know, a little bit, but I knew that was not a sustainable model right from the start. So we did that mostly to raise awareness for our catering services.
Okay.
So instead of trying to sell, you know, $12 platters at a brewery, we were trying to sell $22 per head catering events for backyard weddings and company picnics at the park and anniversary parties and kind of be your mobile food experience right at your location.
Yeah. How long did that carry on?
We ran it for two seasons. Mm-hmm. In the first year, we did close to 40,000 in revenues. And the second year, we were tracking toward a little over 100. So had a lot of growth, but I was working 60, 70 hours a week. And June or July of the second season, my question to the group was, you know, should I get another food trailer into operation so that I can, you know, scale my revenues, because I'm whipping this pony about as hard as I can, and it's peaking out at 20,000 a month or less, 15.
Yeah.
And we went through the local think tank issue processing method, which is basically clarifying questions before suggestions. And they asked things like, you know, how do you like making the same food over and over and over again? You know, how do you enjoy solving this really hard kind of planning processes puzzle every week for no money, you know? Oh, yeah. And do you even want to be where you could be if you can scale this mobile food operation or maybe get a restaurant? Like, do you want a restaurant? That doesn't really seem like it would be as fulfilling to you as this think tank is. And so in the end, one of their suggestions, the first suggestion on the board was, you know, park that food trailer in your backyard and go get a job that's flexible enough to let you keep working on Think Tank, because that's your scalable business, that's your passion, and let some other fool run a mobile food business.
Well, let's turn now to the Think Tank, because that has become more than just your passion. It's become a fairly rapidly growing entity here in Northern Colorado. Tell us first a little bit about, you kind of developed it out of necessity, mm-hmm. not only your own, but, you know, of other people that you knew. So it was kind of a grassroots entrepreneurial venture where you saw a need and you created something to meet that need. Can you talk a little bit about what you perceived in the marketplace that made you say this think tank is something that needs to happen?
Yeah, sure. And a lot of this is reflection in the rearview mirror, I would say. But I was familiar with really two different but similar functions. I was familiar with Vistage, which is the 800-pound gorilla in the peer advisory industry. At that time, it was $1,000 a month for the small business group, and I think $1,500 or something for the CEO group. Mm-hmm. And obviously, that was way out of reach for me. But I did see, I did come to know through my banking career a lot of Vistage members. I had been in a Vistage Trusted Advisors group for a while, so I knew how the process worked, the issue processing techniques and perspective gathering, if you will. And then I was also familiar with three or four different what I call homebrew groups or self-managed groups around the community, where somebody had been in a Vistage or a Renaissance Forums or a Young Presidents, but frankly grew tired of the $1,000 a month investment and said, hey, I'm just going to grab my eight friends here and we're going to take turns being the organizer, facilitator, and we'll have our mastermind, you know, basically. So I was familiar with those, and those really worked well also. Like I noticed that they, people that got into that kind of an experience usually improved their business, and they could, you know, they had bigger numbers faster when the banker asked for them. They were like, oh yeah, I'll send it to you tomorrow, instead of, oh, let me scramble it and see if my bookkeeper can get that put together for next week. And, you know, they knew where their business was at so much better. So when I was leaving banking, trying to start this restaurant, I was like, well, I want that structured enterprise because I don't need more to do. That was what my friend told me to do, was start a group that I would be the facilitator of, because I knew everybody. And mm-hmm. I had a lot of contacts and resources at my disposal. I had a pretty good picture of business as a holistic enterprise that takes, you know, the marketing skills, the financial skills, the social capital, this and that. But I felt like I already had too much to do. I was, you know, doing a think tank. So the model really became built on the preferences of our first facilitator, Andrea Grant, who you probably know through the SBDC. So she and her husband had built a relatively large business called Builders Appliance Centers, and he had been a member of Tech and later Vistage, which is the predecessor to Vistage. So she was passionate about that, having really helped them advance their business. They grew to seven locations and near 20 million in sales, and then sold and retired in Northern Colorado and started volunteering at SBDC, and then she was a Vistage chair for several years. But she was out of her non-compete with Vistage. She left really because she didn't like selling it. Mm-hmm. She was a CPA by training, and she frankly had enough wealth that she didn't need to hear those 10 no's for every yes and build these chapters to the level that Vistage wants people to do. They want people to have two or three chapters of up to 16 members each and mm-hmm. really turn it into a cash flow engine for Vistage and this person. For her, she loved the experience of the facilitation and seeing the growth and stuff. A $10,000 or $20,000 a month income wasn't going to drive her much more than a $500 a month income. Well, that's probably a little bit of a fib, but our agreement was basically, Kurt, you're going to get all the members, and then I'll just do the facilitation for $500 a month. Mm-hmm. And I charged $150 a month to those initial eight or so members that signed up, and we eventually developed, we'll cap it at 12, and blah, blah, blah. So that was kind of the mix of things, and it was also informed by I had been in Rotary Club for several years, so that service above self instinct was something that was not only built into me, but I saw its expression so much in these other members of the club. Mm-hmm. And then earlier in my journey, I became a Christian relatively late in life, at 27 or so, and got into this organization called Bible Study Fellowship. Mm-hmm. And BSF, after my second year, they said, hey, we think you would be a great discussion leader. Small groups that meet as part of our model. And I said, you know, I'm a two-year-old Christian. I don't know anything about the Bible, so I can't teach it. They said, well, you're learning together. You're just managing an effective conversation. You don't know the truth. You just help seek it with this group of people. And they trained me in that, and I eventually accepted that role and did that for a couple of seasons. But that really helps to transmit to these facilitators like Andrea that, like, she's a deep expert in financial understandings and systems and dashboards, mm-hmm. and e-performance metrics and stuff. But she would say, you know, I'm not great at marketing necessarily. That's not one of my sweet spots. And so we say, well, this role of the local facilitator is just that. It's a facilitator. You're not the answer provider. You're just there to run an effective meeting with a whole bunch of entrepreneurs that if there's not somebody whose job it is to keep a meeting on track, it'll go off track. Mm-hmm. And so those are like that vestige experience with the high structure, the professional facilitated resources and speakers and the kind of fixed methodology that we always use, plus the Rotary Service of Bosel, plus the Bible Study Fellowship facilitator role, kind of came together to form this role of the local facilitator, which is how we've been able to scale and why we're excited that we can continue to grow once we make that easier for those people to find us and learn how do we do it.
Okay. And so one of the things that you've done is you've created, is it a chapter model where you have That's chapters right, yeah. around Northern Colorado?
Yeah, we have four chapters in Fort Collins and one in Loveland right now.
Okay.
And each one has its own local facilitator. So I mentioned Andrea Grant, but we've got four other facilitators that they're largely, I don't look over their shoulders. I plop the people, I find the people that I think are especially talented or have a lot of upside or some special sauce to bring to the group. Mm-hmm. And then I introduce them to the facilitator and they meet and, you know, agree yes or no. Sometimes they say, no, it's kind of a stretch here, Kurt, maybe in a year or two, but they're not ready yet, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then once we both agree on a candidate, then we bring them to that chapter to meet everybody. And they get to sit through most of a meeting and then leave early. And then the chapter has unanimous consent authority over whether they, in fact, will add to the vibrancy of the conversation there. So okay. We try to be very open-handed. We don't charge, like Vistage, if Vistage wants you, you're just in there. But the $1,000 price point or, you know, $1,500 price point keeps the riffraff out, as we would say in North Dakota. Because you can't just put everybody in a group. Not everybody is going to be a fit. Not everybody is willing to change themselves as a leader and to take feedback. And so anyway, that's the model we've developed. And each chapter meets, it's, you know, third Thursday is at this location, second mm-hmm. Tuesday is at this location. And so they have a lot of autonomy. I don't even know what's going on in the lives hardly of my members. And that's one of the things I want to be more intentional about this year is having that intentional reconnection with these people that trusted me with this vulnerable and transparent membership experience, and then I ghosted on them and left them to their own devices, and you know, to good devices, because our facilitators are incredible people and mentors to me, mm-hmm. and great leaders in their own right. So I'm trusting them to a safe place. But
well, let's now that you've brought up your facilitators, let's talk a little bit about your facilitators are largely folks who've retired from business. And are just willing, they're in a place where they want to give back. Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about how that developed?
You know, we do pay this facilitator function, and, mm-hmm. and we've increased that quite a bit since the original $500 a month fixed fee for Andrea. But it isn't commensurate with what their experience might command if they were trying to be a consultant or whatever. So mm-hmm. You know, passion for business is one of the key characteristics that we look for, that they just, whether it's wholesale business or retail or whatever, just that they're passionate about the function of business as being a force for good is also part of that. And just have some drive, that purpose-driven, give-back mindset in their role. And they're doing it for the experience more so than the paycheck. Yeah. Right now, we our compensation, we've raised our price over time to $249 a month, and the facilitators get somewhere close to 40% of that. They can make a little over $1,000 a month if they have a full chapter, mm-hmm. and that's for what I think is a light yoke. It's a 15 to 20 hours a month. There's a 4-hour meeting, a few hours worth of emails and planning and one-on-ones with members. And so they're not looking for a 20-hour a week job even, but 20 hours a month is actually something I can really enjoy. I can still travel a lot. I can still spend a lot of time on the golf course and really be something that keeps them involved, but isn't something that becomes a burden, you know, that mm-hmm. requires a lot of their time.
If I'm a small business owner and I hear about Loco Think Tank and feel like that I'd like to engage with the services, how do I know that I'm ready for Loco Think Tank?
You know, that's a really good question too. We developed a list of what I call thinker characteristics. We call our members thinkers. And we've got 10 characteristics, and we say you have to qualify for 7 of them to apply. Record of growth, perspective seeker, owner and decider, experienced manager. They've got the time and financial means to invest in this experience. Founder or co-founder, it isn't required, but it's one of those elements that shows that that perseverance is part of your attitude, working on, not just in, employees and reports. So much of it, if you're a solopreneur, we are planning actually, and I'll mention that, having a builders group that will be launched eventually for the under 5 employees kind of demographic. So employees and reports is important, because when we've had too many solopreneur types in these thinker groups, A, they don't have a lot of management experience, so they can't speak into those situations as well. And B, they don't have a lot of management problems. And so the issues that are processed by the other members kind of fall ineffective as well. So we've seen that over time. And I'm, something that's on all my characteristics cards is enjoyable personality. This is a nice people's club. And that they bring a special skill or talent. So we don't, you know, it's subjective measures, of course, and we let people kind of measure themselves against that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of, they've made that first transition. They're off the launch pad. They've got a going concern. They're making profit. You know, they've got some time to reinvest. They've got to extract themselves from more of the day-to-day activities if they're going to continue to grow.
Okay. And if they're in that place that they'd like to at least look at the characteristics, how would they find you?
Our website has a lot of our information on it. Of course, just locothinktank.com, L-O-C-O. So it's LOCO stands for local community.
Mm-hmm.
That's also, not crazy. You know, make it crazy. Yeah, make it crazy. Don't talk to somebody. And make your spouse crazy if you ask them one more time what they think you should do. But locothinktank.com has got the characteristics of the thinker groups we're also working on. So I mentioned the builders chapters for the smaller guys, thinkers, and then we're just getting ready to launch our Loco Next Level chapter, which will be that 5 million and over revenue person with 50 employees and up.
Okay.
Because again, they're facing kind of different challenges. Again, they're largely removed from the day-to-day obligations, but how do I manage these managers? And how do I get the sound of the vision and the mission to reach the front lines from 3 layers away, and all that? So we're preparing, and that's our vision for future growth, is we can have all 3 of these levels that kind of feed into one another. The next level guys, some of their skills will come down as speakers or presentations to the thinkers, and actually our model for the builders chapters is that our thinkers that have a passion for facilitation and business in its own right will actually be the facilitators for the builders chapters.
Okay. In our conversation before the call, you had mentioned that you're starting to look at new locations for new chapters to pop up. Is that something that's on the table right now?
Yeah, I would say, as I mentioned, I'm focused on that Loco Next Level chapter at this moment, but I do have kind of a wait list in Fort Collins here. So we'll start another thinker chapter in Fort Collins, but we think that our model going forward is really wherever I find the right kind of person, that local facilitator person that has that combination of passion for business and give that person that's got that right mindset and that give back mentality and could see themselves in a role like this, that we can get them up here to meet our other facilitators, do some training about what our best practices are and what our toolkit is, and then have an event in their community, whether it's Boulder or Colorado Springs or Pueblo, where we get a real good speaker put together, or in some other fashion find a a few hundred prospects through our market research, get an event that draws 50 of those people to it, and launch a chapter with the best 10.
Okay.
And just move on. I spent a lot of time last year just networking and trying to build groups organically in other markets, Cheyenne especially, but also Boulder, Denver, Longmont, really, and just really didn't catch traction because it's just a little too stop-start, and I'm only one person. You know?
Yeah.
And so I believe that, and I've gotten a lot of feedback on this, that if we can, you know, get kind of an event-driven marketing model where we find our bedrock, our cornerstone of this facilitator person, and then do our pre-work, do our work through a great event that lets people recognize the value of peer advisory in their life, and just get our voice, the words we say, to be effective, and then we can just, you know, set it and forget it to a certain extent. We're starting to do some really good things as far as surveying our members to make sure that their facilitators providing a really good experience, and we're doing quarterly meetings of our facilitators so that they can know what the best practices are and share ideas and challenges with one another, find that same kind of safe place for processing this kind of significant role. You know, you're kind of helping shepherd or walk alongside these small business people on their journey. And if they crash and burn, or if they get divorced or commit suicide, I mean, those are tragedies, right? And so it's a high leverage role, you know, for this 15 or 20 hours a week. If you can create better run businesses that hire more people and have more peace in the seat of the owner decider, I mean, that's a really impactful role for a lot of people to be able to say, I didn't know.
Definitely. One last thing that I wanted to ask you about, you've got a small business planning and strategy workshop coming up. It's a three-day series with the Larimer SBDC. Can you tell us a little bit about that workshop, who it's for in particular, and a few more details about that?
Sure. Thank you for mentioning that. That's how our acquaintance is through the SBDC. So yeah, April 10th, 17th, and 24th, three Wednesday mornings in a row for 3 hours each. We're going to have this business and strategic planning class. I want to say it's a really fairly holistic overview of what goes into a good business plan that you would present to a funder, kind of structured toward a bank financing or a friend's family kind of an offering, or maybe to an outside investor, although usually you'll have a little bit more pitchiness toward it. Mm-hmm. But it's everywhere from market surveying and research to what are financial statements, what is your break even, how do you calculate that, why does that matter, what are fixed and variable expenses on that side, to, you know, what is an org chart, what are the critical functions that your business has to be able to do, what is your special sauce, your mission, vision, values. So it's really, I make it a very conversational kind of session where we get a lot of feedback from one another to speak into each other's situation, much from like my experience in these think tank chapters. Mostly it's startups, people that are planning something, preparing to plan something. About a third or so of the attendees have a business that's in operation, but they're either got into business without a plan and now they're sensing their need for a plan, or what they've been doing isn't quite what they should be doing, and they want to kind of reset, if you will, and kind of reset the direction, you know, pick a new place on the viewfinder to point toward instead of what's been happening, maybe because what's been happening isn't working.
Well, we're going to include a link for the registration page for that particular workshop for anybody in Northern Colorado, particularly Larimer County, who is interested in that workshop. Larimer SBDC and Loveland Business Development Center are both extraordinarily valuable resources that help out small businesses throughout this area, and I'm real delighted to work with them, and I'm delighted mostly because I get to meet people like Kurt.
Well, it's amazing. I have to tip my hat to Mike O'Connell, because he's just built out the infrastructure of that program so much since he's arrived, and you know, Andrea is one of the longstanding counselors down there as well. And, you know, for a long time, they just didn't have the critical mass of consultants that small business people would want to engage in. But he's really helped to make it cool and built a community of people that are all heart forward looking to, you know, impact their community in a positive way. And so I just tip my hat to the quality of people, yourself included, that he's gotten on the radar and gotten into the fold, as it were, because it makes a big difference for this region.
Well, thanks for that. And I share those sentiments. It's amazing to look around our consultants meetings and just look at the talent in the room. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's 5 times the talent it was 5 years ago. And it's a great thing to see.
Well, Kurt, I'd like to end on one note, and that is I'd like to ask you, through your work with the think tank, what do you feel like is probably the most striking impact that the think tank has had on you and your business?
You know, on me and my business is probably just self-awareness. By looking at yourself kind of through your friends and peers' eyes so frequently, I've been through probably 100 of these meetings now, just that self-awareness, not just within me, but really within almost all of my members. They're compared to the common business owner, they're just so aware of what their strengths are, what their gap areas might be, what they like to do, what they don't like to do, what they should do, what they shouldn't. And that, I think, is really significant. And the other thing that popped to mind, it wasn't really about me, but the most surprising thing, I guess, is just the love for this role that these local facilitators have. Like, it's just, for most of them, it's just like the best thing that they do. It's almost comparable to building of their own business back in those days. Now they get to live vicariously and see the wins. And a lot of times, from a position of not knowing if they'd be able to have that impact anymore, you know, or they went without it for a couple of years, they weren't leading anything, and then they get into this chair and they go, feels so much nicer to have a team around me again, even if they're all running their own teams. It's just great. And so I just really am inspired by that. It's, you know, quite, I wish I could say I planned that as part of the thing, but it's just been inspiring to see it. It makes me feel really good, and I'm humbled by the opportunity to be a part of building that work.
Well, it's an exceptional program, and I just offer all of my appreciation and congratulations for the way that you've put it together and the amazing work that you're spreading in the community. I'd like to just say thank you, Kurt. This has been a wonderful conversation, and I wish you all the best. I'll remind people again that if you'd like to find out more about Kurt and Loco Think Tank, the website is locothinktank.com. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we finish?
No, just that I think you should read me bedtime stories. I love your voice, I love your podcasts, and I'll probably have to download a few of them just for those late nights when I'm trying to think about Loco Think Tank. Just tell me about something else interesting instead.
You make a list and I'll read them.
Okay. Yeah, that would probably put me to sleep right away, a list of things to do that I don't want to do.
That sounds good, man. Well, thank you
all
again,
right,
Kurt. Thanks for taking the time to listen to, subscribe, and review the Reset Podcast. The Reset Podcast features interviews, insights, and in-depth reflections that will help you navigate your own fresh start. If you'd like to be a guest or share an idea for a topic you'd like to hear about, please contact podcast@franklintaggart.com. I offer a wide range of services to people who are ready to live with clear direction, new possibilities, greater freedom, and unlimited creativity. If you're looking for a new beginning, I'm available to help you. More information is available at franklintaggart.com. The Reset Podcast is a production of Franklin Taggart and Make Your Own Way Media. All rights reserved.